Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Seth, there's a lot of people on the text page who want you to kick Joe Kelly's ass.
Oh, I would never do that. I would debate him. I would gladly do that.
Okay. Well, there's people that are going to pay your bail to punch him in the face. I'm just telling you.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I noticed, and I don't want to go into just what people say on social media, because that's annoying. But as far as, I mean, you can see it on television, I think, that people act like Astros fans and players should just sit back and take whatever anybody wants to give them. And then, and when anybody tries to push back and say, well, here are the actual facts, they say, oh, well, you're not owning it. Well, no. The Astros players completely, totally, 100% owned the things they actually did. Mm-hmm. But if I'm accused of a crime, am I not allowed to defend myself from all accusations of other crimes that I did not commit? I would imagine, okay, hey, look, I readily admit. Manslaughter, I did it. It was my deal. Well, yes, and then you also murdered four people. Hold on. I did not. And then their response would be like, listen, you committed manslaughter. You need to own it by also owning these four other things that you didn't actually do.
Or that you're lying about not doing those four other things.
Yeah. You know? And by the way, as far as, let me lead a disclaimer, any manslaughter that I may or may not have committed in my entire life, the previous 1 minute was not admission of
that was a hypothetical. Yeah, it was purely hypothetical.
I've never actually done that thing that I did.
Speaking of getting caught, we're going to get more stories like this. It never ceases to amaze me how dumb some of these players are. You've got whatever went on with the Marlins and the Cardinals going out and doing their thing that started a coronavirus brush fire in their clubhouses. You've got Lou Williams going to Magic City to get wings while he's on a bereavement leave from the NBA bubble. You've got the two clowns from the Cleveland Indians, the Plesac, and then you got Clevinger, who's lying about going out when, I mean, he's out in Chicago. It's the third biggest city in the country. Now, Seth, this is a new kind of dumb right here. Seahawks rookie cornerback Kima Sivirand, who was an undrafted free agent from Oklahoma State, which is code for expendable if you do something this dumb. Now, you pointed out to me, he's from the area here, right?
He's from Cyprus.
He is. Okay. Well, that makes me sad because I love the city of Cyprus, and I like to stick up for fellow Houstonians, but this is just too ridiculous to not make fun of. He was caught. He's a rookie cornerback for the Seahawks, and so as a rookie, an undrafted rookie, he's in a team hotel during training camp, right? He may not even make the team, so he doesn't have an apartment yet. He's in a hotel with all the other rookies. He was caught earlier this week on video trying to sneak a woman into the team hotel. This is according to a source confirming it to ESPN. The NFL Network first reported the circumstances of Sivirand's release, noting that, okay, Seth, I don't know if this is censure-worthy or commendation-worthy.
Okay.
The NFL Network first reported the circumstances of Sivirand's release, noting that the woman he was trying to sneak into the hotel was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise herself as a player.
Well, yeah, that's.
Does he get censured for stupidity or commendationed for creativity?
I think he gets a commendation for creativity because, mind you, this is a thing in this time of COVID. We have to do two things. One, we have to care about each other. But two, we have to also have empathy for others. And maybe, I don't know, perhaps remember the time where you were 21, 22 years old, and where you were thinking with your broveries more than your brain. Mm-hmm. this is sometimes what a man resorts to. And usually they act even much more haphazardly than this in making a bad decision. I have to applaud any young man who's making a poor decision in a smart manner by disguising this young lady as a Seahawks staffer. When I look, he didn't dress her up.
No.
The article says a Seahawks player.
The article says a player, which brings a whole other set of encyclopedias into this.
That's what that article said. I don't know. I'm not sure because I saw other articles that just said she was wearing Seahawks gear.
Well, it's way more fun like to think staffer. That he was trying to sneak her in as a player because then it becomes, okay, whose gear was she wearing? Because let's face it, if she was wearing Dwayne Brown's gear, this was one thick woman.
If she, yeah,
I want to know
either,
what his type is. I want to know what
really
Sivrin's type is. It's one thing if he's trying to sneak her in with a little Tyler Lockett action, miniature wide receiver. It's another thing if she's trying to sneak him in as Cedric Ogbui, an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I think he probably. I'm guessing there's a little bit of misreporting here. Unless if he was trying to sneak her in as a player, I almost have to applaud the ambition, but. I think the more likely thing is that she was wearing Seahawks gear, like the same gear that some of the young female interns might be wearing.
Yeah,
the athletic gear, and maybe he was trying to pass her through as an intern. Which, by the way, little aside, that's some of the most fun of training camp is watching the romances kindle between young interns during the doesn't happen with all
that's
of them. You know,
that's the fun part of training camp.
Well, you got to keep yourself diverted, distracted somehow.
Yeah, that's true.
But I look. Sometimes it happens to the best of us when we're young, dumb, and full of stuff.
Yeah.
It's that you're
ambitious.
You make poor decisions. And this is the other thing, Sean. I'm not going to sit here and say that I know whether or not he'd had her tested 3 times in the past week. For all we know, he'd already tested her 3 times.
That's true.
And she'd passed all 3 of those tests.
Yeah, that's
true. And he was smuggling a woman of pristine immune system into his
room. No, I'm sure video footage is going to surface of him in hospital scrubs with the gigantic Q-tip sitting her down in a chair and glossing over the edge of her nostrils to make sure. And then she had to pass 3 tests to make sure she could sneak in the hotel disguised as Bobby Wagner.
Sean, I'm an expert in this area. This is my favorite niche on Pornhub, actually.
What's that?
Sneaking women into hotel rooms dressed as football players
during a pandemic
to escape the attention of Pete Carroll.
You see a COVID test as foreplay.
Yeah, but this is the classic example. Boy, coaches are almost hoping that something like this happens because what they love to do is take a fringe player who probably wasn't going to make the team and say, look,
you see,
this is what happens when you break the rules. Meanwhile, have Russell Wilson try to smuggle his annoying girlfriend there into the hotel and see what happens to Russell. Yeah, his wife. And see what happens.
Maybe he's got an annoying girlfriend on the side. You never know.
If he does, she's definitely annoying.
No doubt. No doubt. Pete Carroll actually said, rule number one is always to protect the team.
Yeah.
So he praised the Seahawks veteran leaders for sending the right message to the locker room about the need to be disciplined while preparing for a season. So it sounds like Pete Carroll actually got with the leadership group on the team. You know, NFL teams have a lot of them have these leadership councils, maybe one from each position group. And it sounds like Pete Carroll strikes me as somebody who would involve when it comes to a decision like this, even though
that's a main roster decision, right? It's the coach and the GM.
But you're so right. God, he's probably so glad it was Kima Sivrin. This guy's probably like the 11th cornerback or 12th cornerback on the depth chart.
Yeah, I mean, this is
he got a $2,000 signing bonus.
Look, Mark Gastineau, the story I always heard was that when Mark Gastineau was going out with Brigitte Nielsen, he would leave training camp every night. I think they used to have training camp at either Lehigh or Lafayette, one of those Patriot League schools. And he would skip curfew every night and pay like the $10,000 fine just to go spend the night with Brigitte Nielsen.
Was 80s Brigitte Nielsen worth a $10,000 fine every night? She was pretty stark, man.
She might have been paying for it. Yeah,
she could have
been paying the fine.
She might have been making more than him. mean, she was a big star.
Did you know that Drago there, what's his name, the player that, the actor that played Drago?
Dolph Lundgren is his name.
Dolph Lundgren, he's like a PhD in some kind of science or something.
Is he really?
He's a very bright guy, yeah. Okay. Which I guess he learned something from all the steroid regimentation during that movie shooting.
Okay. Well, he may have, and he got a nice payday for Creed 2. He was back in Creed 2. It looks good. It's, you know, it's been 30 years since the Rocky saga, that era of the Rocky saga. He looks pretty good still.
Yeah, boy, that's just, for so many that didn't, you know, for a lot of our younger people, that might not have made any sense at all. Sorry. Brigitte Nielsen was she played the wife of Drago in Rocky IV, and they were just these kind of, these super genetically gifted creatures out of the Soviet Union.
That's right. Yeah. I feel like back in the day, like you mentioned Mark Gasson, like I feel like Lawrence Taylor got back to his room and there was already an orgy going on. You know what
right,
I mean?
And it was actually sent by the opposing team to try to tire his legs out. Probably not in the preseason. Teams wouldn't do that in the preseason.
Yeah, God, he might have gotten 50 sacks a year if the other teams weren't sending hookers and blow to his room every night.
Who's the NFL player most susceptible to that tactic right now?
Right now? Look, Odell Beckham Jr. I don't know that these guys are big cocaine freaks like LT was. You know what I mean?
I mean, Odell's girlfriend certainly seemed like she.
Right, that's why I bring him up. He is careless enough to wind up on social media doing these types.
Yeah,
of things.
I know. For all the crap Gen Z gets and the younger millennials, because even the older players in the NFL now are basically like on the tail end of the millennial generation,
right.
I think. Millennials are 25, 26, 27. That's the cutoff
right now.
But for all the crap that they get, they're so much better behaved than my generation and beforehand.
Yep.
They don't get in trouble the way we used to.
Nope.
Now, not me personally. I got away with a lot of stuff. I never got caught.
In general.
But these kids just don't they generally keep to themselves.
All right, Texans training camp is underway. Practices get started today. Bill O'Brien on the station today at 8 o'clock sharp with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. J.J. Watt going to be on with the guys this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley, and I will be checking in with updates from practice throughout the afternoon here. I'll be on right after practice with John and Landry. I'll be on at 5:15 with Clint and Ron. So we're off and running, man. It's football is here, and the next goal, get to September 10th. Goal after that, just get through each week, baby, because so far so good here in Houston with managing COVID-19 and football in the same ecosystem. All right, which leads us to this question. Will there be fans in the stands? The answers are starting to roll in around the league. And this one is, quite honestly, the least surprising. That's next. It is Texans training camp. We will, in the next segment, Seth is going to give me my marching orders. He's going to give me my assignment for today at the Texans' first practice of things that I need to be watching, because I am only one set of 10 sets of eyes that are going to be watching practice. So I feel it's a big responsibility I've got here.
I regret that I won't be able to be out at practice watching this year, but I'm not going to lie. There's a part of me that's grateful that I'm not going to be out there for an 11:30 a.m. start time at practice when it's going to be 174 degrees.
Yeah, I do wonder how much they're doing in the bubble and how much they're doing outside. I'm not sure yet.
If I were you, I'd hope it's like, well, it can't be completely in the bubble. There's so many people during training camp. I mean, you can. Hey, yeah, I bet. I bet they do a lot of it in the bubble.
Well, part of the reason why they've trimmed down the media that are allowed to go and the only certain staff members are in the tier that they're allowed to be in the bubble is because they have to do some stuff in the bubble.
Oh, okay. So Jerry Jones was all gushing about the ventilation system at Texas Stadium.
Yes.
That is a big thing. Like we found, right, being outside is a whole lot better than being inside if you're trying to reduce the transmission.
Right.
When they do have these practices in the bubble, I would be concerned just that that's a whole lot of air. That's an air pressure bubble, you know. They pump air in there, and it's got to be harder to ventilate it. So ask somebody today about the ventilation.
Okay.
Did they amp it up? I don't know. Like, what are they doing to account for the fact that it is an indoor environment?
I am going
to
ask them about the ventilation of the bubble. Seth, for you, I will do that.
We got to keep up with Jerry, with the Jerry Joneses.
Speaking of which,
he got us on the scoreboard. I don't want to get him. I don't want him to get us on the ventilation too.
The Cowboys on Thursday revealed their plan to make their home of AT&T Stadium as safe as possible for fans in 2020 amid the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Seth, as you know from our interviews with Darren Rovell each week, he revealed on our show publicly for the first time, that just a couple of weeks ago, the Cowboys were discussing the idea of still hoping for 100% attendance in AT&T Stadium in week one. This is just a few weeks ago. No, I don't see that happen. Legally, I don't think that can happen here in the state of Texas. The team announced its safe stadium policy, which will include a limited stadium capacity with tickets distributed in seat blocks known as pods to maintain distance between groups who are not known to one another. Okay, so here's how it goes. Fans will be required to maintain pod integrity by only transferring tickets to family or friends within their trusted group. So I read that to mean that if you're someone who's looking to sell your Cowboy tickets, you can only sell it to somebody who's within your quote-unquote trusted group per the team's release.
You better have a rich uncle, basically.
If you
want to make money on it.
So they worked with the CDC on these guidelines, the state of Texas, local public safety, and health authorities.
Yeah, the good thing is that I'm sure nobody will lie or fudge the numbers on that.
No. Come on.
What are they going to do?
Blood test.
Are
they going to
go to Ancestry.com and be sure that you're on the up and up? Come on.
I feel like Jerry's going to wind up with an Ancestry.com sponsorship out of all this. The policy will also require, no surprise here, all in attendance need to wear masks. They can enter using mobile-only ticketing. They must pay for all food, beverage, parking, and retail with major credit and debit cards only. No cash. Seth, I don't carry cash. I carry cash hardly ever, and really hardly ever during the pandemic. Do you, in the percentage of places that you go to when you get out, how many of them are no cash now? Like, do you notice that a lot?
I was at a farmer's market not too long ago, and I found myself in a situation where I wished I'd had more money than I did. I had like a five on me. And it was like, what do I do with that? I got some berries, and then I was SOL. I couldn't do anything more because they weren't accepting credit cards.
So they didn't. Okay, so they're the opposite of what everybody's doing lately. Because most people are doing credit card only because cash.
Right.
Cash is kids. So I know you don't carry cash anymore, kids. You're all plastic all the time, and Apple Pay and things like that. But cash is one of the most disgusting germ transmitters that's out there. You do the reading on it.
Yeah.
No, I'm willing to risk handling money, you know, and get the germs. It is the germiest thing that I do like to handle, but cash is very, very germy. You never know where it's been.
You know, there's two places I've noticed where the mask wearing seems to be at the lowest when I go to – I've been to farmer's markets and flea markets. It just seems – maybe that's just my luck or whatever. It just seems like it's really though there. But I've also noticed, Sean, that I've gotten very, because I try to be very disciplined about wearing a mask. I try to set a good example and everything. I've lost any of that kind of insecurity about it or the social awkwardness. I feel like as a society now, we too have, you just realize, okay, look, some people are going to be wearing masks, some aren't, and you're just going to, nobody wants to end up on the internet. So let's just do our business and go on about it. I don't feel any emotional reaction or anything to like, oh, I'm the only guy here wearing a mask.
I feel like it's tipped the other way. Like if you walk in somewhere and you're not wearing a mask, everybody's looking at you like, dude, why aren't you wearing a mask?
And right,
if they're mad at you about it, but like, okay, what makes you so special, you know, that kind of thing. So the Cowboys are going to try to get fans in the stadium, and I think the pod thing is just the way that it's structured. Like you said, there are going to be people that all of a sudden are going to have family members that they probably don't even know who they're selling tickets to in the spirit of, well, they're in our pod, they're our friends and family. But in theory, it seems like a good way to try to get fans in the stadium, and I guess overcome some of the logistical stuff of social distancing.
And that's where I still, I feel like the NFL might be holding themselves to too high a standard in some respects, because even if restaurants are being super careful and, you know, accepting 25% and keeping people at a distance or only having outdoor seating, I feel like it's very easy to achieve that same standard in a stadium with all that wide open space. And, you know, for the most part, when people pass each other, it would just be in passing. It wouldn't be extended amount of times. I don't even really care if fans are there anymore or not. I'm okay watching baseball and basketball with no fans. But just from a pure business perspective, I feel like if they feel like they could make money with 25% attendance or at least break even, then by all means, go for it.
I'm going to try to find that out, too. Not just the ventilation of the bubble today, Seth, but do we know where the Texans stand on having fans in the stadium other than they've said it'll be no more than 14,000? Because zero is no more than 14,000. You know, is it going to be 14,000 or is it going to be zero? Because of all the teams that would look, in theory, of all the teams that would look at the Cowboys plan and go, okay, well, we could or should maybe be able to map to this, it would be the Texans because they're in the same state. Their stadiums are different, you know, similar sizes, similar ages, things like that.
Hey, do we know, speaking of fans being in attendance and how many, do we know at this point, when I've heard on the broadcast the people doing the Josh Reddick woo, which is, well, I know that's not the Josh Reddick woo, it's the
Ric Flair,
the Ric Flair woo, but I've seen them do it for Reddick. Is that an actual player or a staff member or something, or is that piped in?
I don't know.
When I hear the woo.
Yeah.
I know, they probably have talked about it on the broadcast at some point, but I've missed it.
I'm not
Text
sure.
Text in, 713-572-4610.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that's a real woo or a piped in woo.
Yeah, that I won't be able to find out for you at Texans practice today.
I bet there might be somebody.
Hey, Omar. I feel like Omar might know because he knows everything. Yeah. I need three things. Are we going to have fans in the stadium? What's the ventilation system like in the bubble? And what's the Josh Reddick woo? Is that real? Is it recorded? Where is that coming from? Yeah. I feel like he might have
O'Brien,
the answer.
Yeah.
During the press conference today?
Yep.
Coach, got a question for you.
I'm going to jump in front of one of the actual journalists for that.
Asking about the
what do you
woo.
Think? Hey, Bill, what do you think about the woo? Is it kind of, it's run its course, right? It's kind of annoying by now.
Yeah, that's what you need to set him up for. Yeah, shade at the Astros. That'll go well. All right. Speaking of Bill O'Brien, he's going to be on 8 o'clock today on the station with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. Texans Training Camp Live gets kicked off today. Texans Training Camp underway. Practice today starts up. It's a big day over at NRG Stadium. We will be carrying all of it for you. I'll be checking in. I'll be watching. I'll be at practice. Really looking forward to that. It's an historic practice. All right, as I mentioned, practice starting today. Seth is going to give me my marching orders. He's going to give me the things that I need to watch for at the first practice. And we've got headlines, which include NFL teams. Man, you wouldn't know that the salary cap is going down next year by some of the spending that went on yesterday. We'll get to headlines as well as we head towards Bill O'Brien at the top of the hour. Stay there. All right, this is a training camp like no other, all over the league. All over the league, teams taking precautions, trying to keep everybody safe from the coronavirus, trying to keep players and staff members from getting infected. They want a football season, and I think it's awesome, and I can't wait to be one of 10 people at practice today, one of 10 media members at practice today. It's going to be cool, and I'm looking forward to bringing all of you the information from there, the things that I see. Of course, if you want to follow on Twitter, the station, at Sports Radio 610, I'll be tweeting from my account as well, at Sean T. Pendergast. And Seth, as you know from going to training camp, both as a player and certainly from what I'm about to say more as a media member, there's only certain things you're allowed to tweet out and let people know. They're protective
right.
They're protective of something. So I actually texted Omar yesterday. I'm like, can you resend those rules? Because the last thing I want to do is now that this is an exclusive club, I don't want to get kicked. I don't want to get kicked out of the River Oaks Country Club that is the 10 media members allowed at practice. You know what
I mean? There was one thing that I was toying with the idea of doing, and I have to give full credit here to Jim Mudd and Josh Innes, who, when Josh was kicked out of training camp a few years ago, he sent Jim Mudd in a crane to watch from the
did you text to try to get the number of the crane
company? The crane company, or not a crane, but a lift, one of those lifts. We are the partner of the Texans. I don't think that's necessarily what they would want a partner to do.
Right.
So I'm not going to be able to watch that. I do think that you got to be careful. You're not allowed to tweet about formations or anything.
Right.
So I think that what I'm going to want you to privately report to me.
Okay, good. Here we go.
Yeah, just how much do we see of two running back backfield sets, including not just David Johnson and Duke Johnson, but also Colin Gillespie aligning up as a fullback. You know, like the old school. Sean, the formation where there's a fullback, a tailback, and a tight end, that used to be called regular. That was the name of the that was the name of the personnel groupings, because that's what you saw all the time. Now you hardly ever see it, but I love me some Colin Gillespie because he's a receiving threat out of the backfield as well.
Okay, so
all manner of two running backs in the backfield. I want to know how much they're focusing on.
You want me
on
to
it.
Text you privately about two running back sets, and this is what I'll need from you, a commitment. And I don't think you do this intentionally, but I just don't want this to just float in one ear and out the other. You have to promise me that you're not going to go to Twitter and say, at Sean T. Pendergast just texted me that Duke Johnson and David Johnson have been lined up in the backfield together for the last 10 plays.
I promise I won't do that. I also won't say that sources, wink, wink, tell me such and such. I won't do any of that.
Please don't do that. All right, so I will I will pinky swear with you right now that I will let you know privately of things.
Okay, thank you.
How about some things? How about some other things? With some other players or some other aspects?
Yeah. Okay, I guess I don't know if they'll do one-on-one pass rush today, but when they do, if you get a chance to watch it, I'd love you to watch Charlie Heck, the drafted offensive lineman. You've only got 5 draft picks here, so you're going to be able to get a look at some of these draft picks. But Charlie Heck, it's always fun to watch guys. I don't care if you're Charlie Heck or Quentin Nelson, you're going to have some rough snaps early on in training camp. I remember when that first-round pick of the 49ers a couple years ago was here in training camp, and J.J. Watt just destroyed him.
Who was that?
He went on to have a good rookie year and everything, but J.J. just had his way with him. It was ridiculous.
J.J. has psychologically crushed many a rookie in joint practices. Remember in Hard Knocks when it was the Falcons? And it was Jake Matthews, you know, son of a Hall of Famer, part of the famed Matthews lineage, 6th overall pick in that in the draft that year, and JJ just, you know, JJ waylaid him. You know, he's a Pro Bowler now, Jake Matthews, but he's JJ has baptized many a young player in joint practices.
There's so much. The offensive linemen have so much to learn, and in the good ones, most of them or a lot of them, they figure it out pretty quickly. It's really cool to watch the offensive linemen improve over the course of like 2 or 3 weeks, because they make mistakes. They learn from them real quick. They know what you can and can't do. So I would say Charlie Heck, I'd like you to watch him, but then I'd also like to see how he responds when he does get beat, because he will get beat. He's a rookie.
And if I see him in the elevator in my building, I'll say, nice practice, bro.
Oh, he's in your building?
He lives in our building, yeah.
Oh, I don't like him riding up. Can you get a private elevator? Can you talk to your concierge?
No, but I will tell you, I don't know that there's a stricter place than the building that we live in as far as social distancing and mask. It's 2 per elevator. Literally my son's visiting right now, and it's me, him, and Amy, and we have to feel like we're criminals just to ride the 3 of us at the same time in the elevator. You know,
If I were Charlie Heck, just for the role playing aspect of it, I would dress my girlfriend or fiance or wife up like in football gear, just like that, rookie in Seattle did, trying to sneak his girlfriend in. Yeah, I'd be like, hey, honey, today we're gonna pretend to sneak you into the apartment.
That's funny.
So I'll watch
and that is something I will be allowed to tweet about. Is you know, so and so just got whooped in an offensive line drill, or you know, vice versa. So I will keep an eye on Charlie Heck for you, Seth. What else?
Randall Cobb. I want to know how many, you know, is Randall Cobb getting a lot of work already? Is Deshaun looking to Randall Cobb early and often? Because this is going to be one of the real tests of Bill O'Brien's rejiggering of this offense. Is going to be, look, you finally got a veteran slot receiver for Deshaun Watson. You know, I think O'Brien has had a couple veteran older guys that could play slot here, you know, before Deshaun got here. But since Deshaun has been here, he's never had a veteran guy that knows how to play slot. He's never had anything nearly approaching a Wes Welker or a Julian Edelman. Now that he has it, is he going to get rid of the ball quicker? Is it going to be a more diverse array of receivers getting the ball? This is really the key to the offense of this season, in my opinion, is specifically how does Deshaun, who's never been particularly fond of throwing to the slot receiver unless it's Deshaun Watson, how does he utilize the slot receiver this year?
Yeah. So Randall Cobb. And, by the way, Mike McGlinchey, was that the offensive lineman that J.J. baptized? He was a 9th overall pick in the draft, Mike McGlinchey, out of Notre Dame. Is that who you were thinking of with San Francisco?
Yeah.
Just curious, yeah. All right, so
it doesn't sound right, but whatever.
Okay,
So, Kali Waring, I think that Kali Waring, if I were going on, I was on with somebody in L.A. a couple weeks ago, and they asked me, like, out of the blue. I never talk about fantasy football, and somebody asked, like, so who would be the dark horse fantasy player be for the Texans? And I was like, the Kali Waring. And that's what came out, and I agreed with myself afterwards when I actually thought about it. Because with all these different, we know that Bill O'Brien loves the tight end. He learned to love the tight end when he was in New England, and he had Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. Neither of those two guys are here, for better or for worse. Hopefully, you know, the better part is that nobody here is a murderer on this roster.
And Hernandez is not coming back anytime soon.
Nobody here is a murderer because, frankly, Sean, this team lacks an edge. So, but I will say that Kahale Waring has the athleticism and the speed to hurt defenses down the seam the way you see really good tight ends do. And especially if Deshaun is doing a good job spreading the ball around, there will be opportunities downfield for Kahale Waring. It doesn't have to be this like, hey, we ran an RPO and all of a sudden Darren Fells is a thing. Like, no, this could be Kahale Waring flat out torching inside linebackers when they're stuck on coverage with him down the scene in zone coverage. And that's what you hope to see. So I think that Kahale Waring might do some pretty electric things.
He is the biggest upside guy of that group. Like, if you're rooting for a tight end to break out, or if you're rooting for one of the tight ends to hit their ceiling this year, root for that one. Because, you know, I think Jordan Akins is, I know he's only a third-year guy, but he's like 29 years old. Jordan Thomas, he just has to show up without a beer belly this year. And then Darren Fells is 34, 35 years old, and he's been a nice pickup. And even at the, I think they tripled his salary or doubled his salary from what it was last year. If he gives you the same season in 2020 that he gave you in 2019, still pretty damn good value at $3 or $4 million a year. But Kahale Waring is the one who's got that X factor about him.
They've got that, you know, how they like to have three different types of tight ends. One guy that's like could basically almost be a receiver, one guy that's an inline blocker, one guy that's kind of a hybrid. I think they've got perhaps the makings of that so far this year. So Kahale Waring's a big part of that. Body composition. I need you to do body composition on at least several. And look, I know
And I can tweet about this, even though it might come off as fat shaming or, as Joe Kelly said, thin shaming, but I can tweet about body type.
That's right. You can. Yeah, and we'll try to keep it positive and, laud the guys that have obviously put in work.
Of course.
You're newly slim. I heard your last live read because of soda. You're the slimmest you've been since your bar mitzvah or something like that.
Since my bar mitzvah, yeah.
Since your bar mitzvah at your Catholic school.
Right.
What is it? You're the slimmest you've been since when?
Since I moved to Houston in 2007.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
And maybe even before, because I was in Chicago before that. I was heavy in Chicago. You can eat in Chicago, yeah.
It's going to be a whole new world for you. This is going to be a good test for you out of training camp to see, okay, what's it like standing in the heat at a newer, lighter body weight?
Should feel good, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Good might not be the right word, but less worse, I'll say. You're going to feel less like you want to die because
right,
it's so hot.
I was just about to say, right. Less of a death wish. All right. So whose bodies other than my own should I be looking at?
Okay, we talked about this guy earlier, the new acquisition by the Texans, defensive lineman P.J. Hall.
Okay.
He's not fat, but I think in Oakland, it looked like they were trying to turn him into a run stuffer. I think P.J. Hall is athletic enough. I think he has enough natural pop and twitch that he could actually stand to lose a good chunk of weight and play at a lighter weight, like 290 or something. Again, I can't reiterate this enough. He's not out of shape or fat or anything, but he's just a really explosive, stocky dude that looks like he'd move a lot better and be able to take advantage of that natural athleticism better if you're a little lighter. So I'm going to be curious to see what the Texans think of him.
Wonder if he'll be in uniform, and the only reason I bring that up is he failed a physical in Minnesota. And we don't know what – do we know what for? Do we know why they failed him on that?
No,
physical?
I don't think we do.
Yeah.
You know what, then? What we have to hope is that they put him on a weight loss regimen. So he's off on the side and he's, like, using one of those old-school belt machines where they jiggle you and everything,
Dude,
and then they put him
anymore?
In, like – they put him in, like, the old school, like, the sweat box where his head's sticking up out of it.
Right, right.
And then he goes over to a massage table and some guy is doing the karate chops on him. Like, all the old-time weight loss regimens.
He gets
regimens.
Up and he puts on the silver Loudon Swain rubber suit.
Yeah. He's running around.
A lunatic fringe.
Suit.
Journey.
Oh, that was something else Brandy found when she found all my old game balls in storage the other day. She also pulled out this like sauna suit, this like weight loss suit, and she's like, "When the hell were you gonna try this, you dumbass?"
Oh, did you ever wear it? Was it still in the wrapper?
No, it was brand new. Yeah, I don't even remember, but I'm guessing at some point I was like, "Screw it, I'm just gonna lose a bunch of water weight." I probably had to fit into a suit or something, and I was like, "I don't care, I'm just gonna lose the water weight and do it."
Right, give me some other body types that I need to look
at. Nick Martin, look, you don't smuggle weight room gear out of the weight room in a pandemic without about it showing something different when you come back.
If he's not shredded, I'm going to be pissed off. I don't want an offensive lineman's body out of him. I want Nick Martin to – I want him to have his 66 jersey cut off at about the rib cage, and I want him to have washboard abs.
I want this guy to get steroid tested immediately. I want him to be get put into the program because of the way he looks. That he's going to walk – he'll walk across the threshold with a cut-off jersey and the DEA the drug task force, whatever they call it, is going to be like, that's it. You're getting tested.
If the words Nick Martin and suspicion are not trending on Twitter by the end of the day, then something's wrong. Something's wrong. Who else?
Other two guys, two big guys. J.J. Watt, just because, you know, J.J. talked about how he's been working on his body and counting every calorie and all that. And Weaver said that he just looked – that J.J. looks huge.
Yeah.
J.J. is one of the rare NFL – players who actually looks much bigger when you meet him in person.
Yep.
Usually people are like, oh, you're not as big as I thought you were. Yeah, shut up, Joe Kelly. But JJ, I'm intrigued to see if Anthony Weaver was kind of gushing about how big JJ is. I'd like to see if we can tell the difference.
Yeah, because Watt's done a few press conferences, but they've been on Zoom, and you can only see him from like the sternum up. You know, you don't get a good look on those press conferences.
He's not. It seems like all these other veterans that we've signed recently all show up with their guns blazing.
Right.
David Johnson,
yeah.
Brandon Cooks. They all look good,
out,
too.
Guns out, baby.
Yeah. I'm like, these guys have got their prison muscles.
They
like,
do.
They're quarantined. They've been just doing nothing but working out.
Dumbbells, that's it.
They got these quarantine muscles.
Yep.
And then the other one, Charlie Heck. I'm intrigued by Charlie Heck because I think he looks like the classic guy that's got some room to grow and mature, kind of grow into his body.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big, tall, lanky guy, and that's what happened when he was in college. He developed a lot. I'm guessing he probably won a most improved player award at some point in his college tenure because he just physically matured. So I'd like to see like if that matches up in person. Does this look like a kid that maybe over the next couple years becomes – like that's what I had hoped for with Julion Davenport, because Julion Davenport was another guy that was a late bloomer and looked a little bit like he was still almost an adolescent in some ways, like still getting used to his body. And he never really blossomed, but maybe Heck can blossom.
Yeah, we'll see. So Charlie Heck, and then you got one more on here, right?
Lonnie Johnson's feet.
Yeah.
And I know that this is something you were going to watch too. Because
because he's put out all that stuff on social media with the workouts he's been doing.
The footwork king guy that trains them. I think you can look him up at the Footwork King on Instagram. This guy works with a lot of athletes and quite a few Texans. But I swear, the guy must do good work because when I watch these videos, they all look like they're sped up. Mm-hmm. I've been watching these Lonnie Johnson videos, and it looks like they've sped it up by like 1.1 or something. This is what Lonnie Johnson needs to do is – I don't think he even necessarily needs to improve his foot speed as much as he needs to trust his foot speed. Like, whatever foot speed he has, he needs to learn that his feet will get you there. It's one of the hardest things to teach young guys is that, look, your feet will get you there faster than anything else. Don't lunge. Don't grab. Just trust that your feet are going to get you there. So I think this whole offseason of working on this, hopefully Lonnie Johnson shows up at camp. And he's a guy that had an issue last year with sometimes just being overly aggressive. Sometimes it would result in penalties. Sometimes it would result in him whiffing on guys. But he's got to trust his feet. So, yeah, I'd like to see, okay, does this look in real life like it looked like on those Footwork King videos?
If Lonnie Johnson turns into a player, and he didn't have to turn into a Pro Bowl, but if he turns into a solid player for this team that you're talking about wanting to keep around on a second deal, I think Max Sharping is trending into being that type of player, and I certainly think Titus Howard is a guy that if he continues to do what we think he can do, he is a guy they want to keep around. That'll be the top three picks from Brian Gaines' second and final draft here as general manager. Titus Howard, Max Sharping, Lonnie Johnson, a corner and two offensive linemen, two of the biggest need positions for that team going into that draft. If it turns into these guys are foundations of a really good football team moving forward, then sorry, Seth, my computer just lost its battery. Brian Gain is going to deserve an engraved apology, maybe.
Do you want me to do headlines?
I'll do headlines. I'll pull it up on my phone.
Okay,
it's all good. Yeah.
And I guess that's where, you know, poor Brian Gain. Brian Gain did what maybe he did too much of what a good GM is supposed to do, which is think about what's it going to look like 3 years in the future.
Yeah.
And when you're drafting players, typically what a lot of scouts will tell you or personnel people will say is, look, we're evaluating this guy in terms of what's he going to look like in 3 years. So when you draft Tytus Howard, when you draft Lonnie Johnson, you're thinking, okay, what is this? I don't care what this guy is this year necessarily. I want to know what this guy's going to look like in 3 years. The downside of that is that when you get fired a few weeks after enacting that strategy, you end up like getting zero credit for it. If Lonnie Johnson ends up being really good, all people right now are thinking was like, I can't believe Lonnie Johnson, the guy we knew was a project, wasn't awesome in year one.
I know.
An idiot Brian Gain is. And now 2 years from now, Danton Little will get all the credit for developing Lonnie Johnson, and Brian Gain will get none for selecting him.
That's right. All right, let's squeeze some headlines in here before we get to the top of the hour. Bill O'Brien on the station, 8 o'clock, top of the hour in Texans Training Camp Live. Let's hit a few headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Seth, NFL teams still spending money big time, even though the pandemic is probably going to make the salary cap decrease a little bit next year, maybe even a lot next year. We'll wait and see. But that did not stop the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers from resetting the tight end market. George Kittle signing the long-awaited deal, 5 years, $75 million. And just hours later, Travis Kelce signing a deal, 4 years, about $57 million and change. And so now the tight end market, and the previous highest paid tight end had been Austin Hooper at $10 million a year. So, Seth, I think this is probably reflective of just the different type of tight end these two are, and I'm assuming Zach Ertz is foaming at the mouth to get his deal because those three are on a different planet from these other tight ends. But that jumps out at me, and the Kansas City Chiefs still finding ways to maneuver the salary cap and keep this core together has been very impressive.
Yeah, and I think the tight ends have long been underpaid, and you could blame Gronkowski to a certain degree. If Gronkowski had ever really tested the market or tested the Patriots' willingness to commit to him, to keep him around, then, I mean, Gronkowski would have... He should have been paid like he was one of the top wide receivers in the league, or at least that same amount. I mean, you know, Brandon Cooks on his current contract is averaging $16.2 million per year. Is George Kittle worth more to his football team than Brandon Cooks? Yes.
Yes,
he is. And that's just how it's been forever because frankly, Kelce is first time around. And, is this only Kelce's second contract?
It's Kelce's second contract. He's only been in the league for like 3-4 years.
He was on his rookie contract. Yep. Yeah, so it was Gronkowski, and maybe you could blame Aaron Hernandez a little bit. They didn't really push the envelope, I suppose, when it comes to how much tight ends should get paid. So it's going to start falling more in line. And I'll just like that. One quick thing.
Yeah.
Can people stop acting like George Kittle was as physical as Rob Gronkowski? It's driving me absolutely insane. George Kittle, I love the way George Kittle plays. And I love his tenaciousness. I love his willingness to do everything. All that is great. But, like, he gets dish-ragged by linebackers somewhat regularly. But every time he drives a strong safety down the field, like a guy he outweighs by 50 pounds, people act like he's the second coming of Gronk. He's a different type of guy. I'll still take Gronk in his prime any day.
No, so would I. Gronk is the greatest tight end of all time, in my opinion. You know what helps Kittle in that respect, Seth? Where he went to college. I think the fact that he went to Iowa contributes to sort of the narrative that, well, look, they accentuated blocking there. It's offensive lineman you, and Kirk Ferentz likes to growl at people when he's grumpy all the time. And so Kittle, you know, and Kittle is a good blocker. Like, he's worth this money. He is a special player, and they got him in the fifth round, by God. But I think that he went to Iowa, I think, helps drive that narrative of what he's like as a, you know, a mean, tough, road grader blocker type. That's my take on that. Yeah.
And he does. I mean, I don't mean to take away from him other than to say he's not as good as the greatest tight end of all
time.
That's
right.
Sorry.
That's right. Yeah. He is the highest paid tight end of all time now, so good for him. Next headline. The Rockets head into the postseason getting ready for what, in my opinion, is the most intriguing of the 8 playoff matchups in the NBA in the first round, and that is against Oklahoma City, the two teams that consummated the biggest trade of the offseason. Chris Paul to OKC with a slew of first-round picks. Russell Westbrook back here to the Rockets. Ironically, one of the big reasons why the Rockets wanted to move Chris Paul was because of how injury-prone he was at the salary that he was getting paid at nearly $40 million a year. Ironic because Russell Westbrook, it would appear, is going to miss the first part of this series, who knows how long, with a right quad injury. He is banged up. He had an MRI, and Mike D'Antoni said yesterday that they're hopeful of getting him back at some point early in the postseason. But, Seth, it will now be... the two guys whose relationship soured awfully quickly for two guys who really liked each other in 2017, James Harden and Chris Paul, by 2019 couldn't stand each other. I think it's kind of – I want Russ back because I want the Rockets to win, obviously. But there is a bit of a silver lining of intrigue for me that this is Paul versus Harden. Kind of feels like, you know, almost a one-on-one kind of thing.
It does. In a way, though, too, it just still – I don't know. Maybe do other people feel this way or is it just me? The whole thing with Chris Paul is it almost – even though that was the iteration of the Rockets – that came closest to toppling over the unbeatable team, yeah. You know? And it was like it was one of the only teams in the NBA during that entire Golden State era that came close to it. I could never feel the affection for Chris Paul that I should have. And I almost feel dead emotionally about Chris Paul. I don't get it. So this doesn't... I want the Rockets to win this series just because it's their first opponent in the playoffs. Yeah. I would be devastated if they lost it, and it would annoy me more just that they lost the series in a year where I think they really have a chance at winning the championship this year than I would care or give one damn about Chris Paul. I don't know, like, it feels like Chris Paul was just a dream somehow.
He wasn't.
I in denial?
No. And I'm not going into this series with the mindset of I hope they crush Chris Paul. I actually have great respect for what Chris Paul's done in Oklahoma City this year. I think there's a lot of guys in Chris Paul's position, Seth, older player, highly paid player, probably with a little bit of leverage to maneuver out of a situation you don't want to be in, that would have sat home and said, I'll wait till you trade me. You know, we saw Andre Iguodala do that with Memphis. I think that he went in there, took the bull by the horns, is leading some younger guys like this. I think is to me... I mean, it shouldn't be this way. Like, you have a contract, you should live up to it. But in today's NBA, with what the standard is now for what star players can get away with forcing with teams, I think it's admirable what Chris Paul's done in OKC this year.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, last night, the back end of the Western Conference was sewn up. It'll be Portland and Memphis in an 8-9 play-in, a special addition to the bubble play here. Portland is going to be the 8 seed. Memphis is going to be the 9 seed, both teams winning yesterday to clinch those spots. Portland had to sweat a little bit against Brooklyn last night, but Damian Lillard was sensational again. So if Portland wins one game against Memphis, Seth, they will play the Lakers. If Memphis can win two games against the Blazers, they will face the Lakers. Purely as a fan, I'm rooting for Portland because I think it'll be a more fun series against the Lakers.
And we are both in agreement, right, that you... We fear the Clippers far more than we fear the Lakers.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
The Clippers are the Rob Gronkowski and the Lakers are the George Kittle.
Yeah, that's right.
In this situation.
That's right. Yeah. Good analogy. Good analogy.
They're both really good and they should both be respected, but one's simply better than the other. Or a worse matchup for the Rockets
that's
than
right.
the other.
Way to bring it back around. So, bubble play pretty good in the NBA. I was pretty happy with the level of play for those 8 games in the bubble. I'm really looking forward to the postseason. I'm looking forward to the top of the hour here in just a minute and a half or so. Bill O'Brien's going to join Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. It'll be Texans training camp live. Practice is here. We will be bringing you updates throughout the day. I'll be on with John and Landry right after practice. I'll be on at 5:15 with Clint and Show. They have J.J. Watt coming on at 2 o'clock today. So keep it right here, tuned all day on training camp coverage here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, T-cells, and a clean Kinexa watch connection for you.
I will see you tomorrow, 2 o'clock, a special Saturday edition. Seth and I will be on, as well as Clint at 4 o'clock, 2 to 6 tomorrow. We'll see you then, everybody. Texans Training Camp Live is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.